from Hollywood, NBC brings you Hedda Hopper. Hedda Hopper, who daily reports to 30 million readers in America and 8 foreign countries, now reports to you on the air. Here is Hedda Hopper's Hollywood, from the desk by the window, looking right down on Hollywood and Vine.
Hello, everybody. Look over my shoulder while I write my column. We'll have news about famous people here in Hollywood and elsewhere. We'll have personal visits, among others, with Carl Brisson, now singing at the Macambo. And the star who should get another Academy Award for All About Eve, Betty Davis. Okay, let's go. Vera Ellen and Rock Hudson will soon name their marriage date. They've known each other 2 years. While she was in England 6 months making a picture, Rock never took out another girl except by studio request. Jack Briggs, formerly wed to Ginger Rogers, marries Reva Fredericks after the first of the year. She's Bob Mitchum's secretary. Ava Gardner will spend Christmas with Frank Sinatra in New York. Phil Harris's song, The Thing, has the whole country guessing what the thing is. Well, I can tell you this much. It's not a gag. It's a humanitarian undertaking. And Phil will disclose the secret next Sunday on his own radio show. Gary Cooper, one of our more modest actors, says the great advantage of being a star is that you can cash a check in any town you pass through. Shirley Booth and Sidney Blackmere, here with a Broadway hit, Come Back, Little Sheba, screen test for the film version of the play on Tuesday, which Hal Wallace owns. Jane Powell expects a baby in June. Mercedes McCambridge...
Miss Hopper, stop!
Huh?
I mean, excuse me, but I had to tell you.
What's the matter, Patsy?
Well, outside to see you... Well, I'm sorry, but it seems to be a mule.
A what? Oh, Patsy, pour yourself another cup of coffee.
But he had a letter in his mouth. Here.
Dear Hopper, got some words to chaw over with you in private. Now, don't be stubborn, because that's my racket. Signed, Francis. Well, come on, show him in.
Yes, Miss Hopper. This way, Miss, sir.
Well, Francis, start showing. Oh, I see. Go on, Patsy. Leave us alone.
How much you pay that dame? I bet it's too much. How much loot do you get? I bet that's too much.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Francis, what's eating you?
Well, I can wear hats, too. Let me cut a couple of holes in that and you're wearing. Might not look so bad. But I don't think it'd bring me any hay. I tell you, Cousin Hedda, everybody's got their nose in the feed bag out here but me.
Now, Francis, you're working. You're starting a new picture. Mm. Francis goes to the races.
Well, I've been reading your column lately, and there's a kick I want to make. Now, I don't want to seem to be mule-headed about this, Cousin, but you've been giving all these other animals too good a ride. You've been spilling publicity for all of them but me. Here's your last quote in your column. Rhubarb the cat gets caught in a swinging door at Ciro's. Lassie gets a book written about him. Bonzo makes a big monkey out of himself at Universal International.
So that's it, Francis. You're jealous.
Uh-huh.
Oh, now stop it. You're making a perfect ass of yourself.
Now, wait a minute, Cousin. Ain't none of us is perfect. But I'm as good as that rabbit you've been splashing a lot of ink about. Harvey. And what do? You rate him an 18 carat job. You get it, Hopper? Carat? Rabbit? Hey, that's a pretty sharp, thick ad lib there. But you know I can do anything I want to do. And here you're writing all this about this rabbit. And you can't even see him.
Why, Francis, darling.
Huh?
You're one of my dearest friends, and I'll go along with the Harvard Lampoon in proclaiming you the greatest actor of the year. How's that? Make you happy?
Yeah.
Satisfied?
It don't spur me so much. I'm an old army man myself. Cousin Hedda, what I want to get in your column is something about my singing.
Oh, no. Not you, too.
Well, I got to tell you something. It's about a dear friend of ours. It's a tragic case.
Who's that?
Horse called Old Pink, you know. He works out here in these Western pictures, does extra. You know Western pictures. Which way did you go, Sheriff? Put up that bubble gum and come out shooting. Pardon me, ma'am. I got a stone in my boot. They're running them bald-faced herpes up in that draw. Hedda, I was just wondering, could I sing Old Pink complaint song for you tonight here on your program?
You mean you want to give a plug a plug?
Well, that sounds like a music cue. I'm only a horse and it's foolish, of course, to register any complaint. I won't be to blame when I tell you my name. The songwriters call me Old Pink. There's never a change in the songs of the range, and it seems like they write them to bore us. They mention me first somewhere in the verse, and I show up again in the chorus. If Gene Autry decides to go for a ride, I'm saddled without any warning. I beat out my brains riding over the plains, and I'm limp as a rag the next morning. When that's off my chest, without any rest, them hillbilly songsters begin again. I wouldn't be blamed if I changed my name to Off Again, On Again Finnegan. Your host's life is a tree, he gets plenty to eat, you can bet he gets oats every day. While I live on nothing but taxes all rotten, and take it from me, that ain't hay. Now Trigger, of course, he's a fortunate horse, and don't ask me what could the cause be. He's one of those creatures that makes Western features and gets as much fan mail as Crosby. And Silver, you know, he's got a radio show, and his head is as big as a monster. He's a good-looking pony, but oh, what a phony. Imagine a horse with a sponsor. So I've just reached the place where I shudder to face a life filled with cowboys and stripes. Just let me roll over on a soft-bedded clover and look at that mountain over there. Hey, there's an Indian over in that mountain. He's sending up a smoke signal. Look, the smoke's curling up in the sky. Look what it's spelling out. The Hedda Hopper Show. Starring the friend of the people, Francis. Hey,
Francis, and you too, Chill Wills, for bringing him in. And as I was saying a minute ago when my cousin so rudely interrupted me, Mercedes McCambridge, trying to get a small son to finish his turkey dinner, said, if you eat all your food, you'll grow up to be like Hopalong Cassidy. What, said the boy, and pay all that income tax? Lawrence Tierney, who threw away a fine screen career, has joined Alcoholics Anonymous. Charlie Chaplin finally got a passport so he could make a picture in England, which means he also has permission to return. He said he wouldn't go unless he could come back. Now, I wonder who arranged that for him. Thanks to the thousands of listeners who've sent me wires and letters about this show, I wish I had time to answer each and every one individually. Meredith Wilson's former wife married Leroy Van Bommel, head of the National Dairy Company. He's worth millions. Maureen O'Halloran's husband landed in Honolulu at 6 a.m. A brass band met them, escorted them to the Royal Hawaiian Hotel, and kept right on playing. Next day, Maureen learned that it was a John Ford joke. He hired the band. The big news out Sunset Strip these nights is the way a certain entertainer is standing them on their ears at the Macombo. He's the man with the smile, white tie and tails, continental charm and all, Carl Brisson. Carl was at his best that night in the middle of a number, as I found.
Why am I an optimistic guy? Because I always sing Magadulamagadulamagadai. And you can be a happy guy like me if you will only sing Magadulamagadulamagadai. So let us all let's go to the it went wheel up more. To Tom and Dick and Harry, the Yankee girls are gonna marry. Tie a string around a bluebird wing and sing this swingy thing, muggadilla, muggadilla, muggadai. So I am I, what? It's a Disney Hedda Harper. Well, good evening, Donald. This is wonderful. Thank you for coming in here tonight, Hedda. And what a beautiful hat.
It is a hat, isn't it?
I thought it was.
Well, darling, I'm sorry, but why am I an optimistic guy? Because I always sing muggadilla, muggadilla, muggadai. Now, here, I'm going to put you on it. Can you say muggadilla, muggadilla, muggadai?
Muggadilla, muggadilla, muggadai.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Now I'm on the level, Hedda. I'm really going to place for you. What would you like me to sing tonight?
Why, you know what my favorite song is. You know the one I always ask for? Remember?
All right, we'll do it. What about the boys there? Do they know it? That's heaven, fellas.
The last time I saw Harry, her heart was warm and gay. No matter how the chamber, I'll think of happy hours and people who shared them. Old women selling flowers in markets at dawn. Children who applauded punts and duty in the park. And those who danced at night and kept our Paris bright. Till the sound went out. But the last time I saw Sally, her heart was warm and gay. Oh, I heard the laughter of her heart in every sea cafe. The last time I saw Sally, the trees were wet for spring, and lovers walked beneath those trees, and birds found songs to sing. Oh, I got the same old taxi cab that I have got for years. The chorus of that sweet song was music to my ears. We had to say goodbye, Shelby, your heart was breaking then. But the time has come at last, Shelby, when France can smile again. Oh, well, mademoiselle, we're back again in the old days, Shelby. Oh, well, mademoiselle, we started off from Normandy, and now we've got our victory. Heart can sing this happy day, and France will win with the Marseillaise. All's well, mademoiselle, now you can dance again, love and romance again, people love France again. No matter how the danger, we got her back, Mademoiselle. Oh, I bring a little white gardenia as the question of the day.
It's a rare gift to be able to smile at people and make them want to smile back. When you do that and sing too, then your name must be called Brisson. Mary Garden lectures here December the 3rd. She broke a 50-year precedent and went to the opening night at the Metropolitan Opera. Said she wanted to see the old place again before it's torn down. All opera will be coming from television studios soon, says Mary. Leonard Stern, who writes Ma and Pa Kettle pictures, marries Julia Adams in January. She's a solace at Universal International. Forrest Tucker will wed Marilyn Johnson on St. Valentine's Day. I just heard that Noel Coward wrote a sketch for Ty Powers, Johnny Mills, and Monty Cliff for the command performance, titled Three Juvenile Delinquents, and the boys certainly looked it. Ty came in a soiled navy uniform, Johnny in pajamas and sweater, and Monty in rented white tie and tails. Colleen Townsend and Hugh O'Brien start a television series to dramatize the happenings inside a church 7 days a week. It's sponsored by the Hollywood Presbyterians. For a long time now, I've had a bone to pick with Hollywood about the star system. You know what that is. The theory our studios have that if they paint certain people with enough tinsel and hang them high enough in the sky, then all will be well below. And the weather in Hollywood will be perfect forever. Well, I'm not saying we shouldn't have stars, but have you ever noticed how many of them flicker and fade? How many are too pale to be up there in the first place? How many just got the wrong paint job? Now, I'm saying this does Hollywood harm, not to mention the individuals concerned. We want our audiences to trust us. They certainly won't if a girl with only a pretty face or a man with broad shoulders is ballyhooed as the brightest new thing in the firmament and then disappears after one picture. I say that it's up to our studios and producers
to... Would you say it's up to Heather? She came early, Miss Harper. It's Betty Davis.
I heard you, Heather. You're on the verge of saying that what's wrong with our star system is the studio's fault.
Well, that's what I believe. That's why I asked you in here.
I say it's just as much the actor's fault. All right, so we argue.
You're no amateur at that.
Around you I am, dear.
Oh, now, Bethy, I know some time ago I criticized you in my column for something along the same line. For the parts you picked in a couple of pictures. Because there are parts that tarnish even the greater stars. Now I realize I should have criticized your studio. They insisted on your playing them, didn't they?
Had anything I've done, I take full responsibility for. But I do know what you mean, the control studios have over the handling of their stars, the building of their stars, deciding what parts they should play.
And they're not always right. I've seen more promising careers botched up by some producer's desire to turn a young star's quick publicity into quick cash.
Well, what do you expect out of studios? Hearts and flowers? They're in business, aren't they?
But their business depends on maintaining those people as valuable properties for as long a time as possible.
Heather, we're silly and wide-eyed if we don't admit that movies are a big industry and studios are concerned with maintaining themselves. Who's to look out for the actor? Simple, the actor himself.
Well, let's take an example. A young girl comes out here to Hollywood. She gets a terrific break, a foolproof part, and her picture's a great success. So what happens? Her studio says from now on, nothing but star billing is good enough for her.
But she's not ready yet to.
Of course not, but her studio makes her play another lead, whether she can do it or not, without training, preparation, or experience.
She should have refused that second part. She could have.
What? And be suspended at 21?
Oh, I know it isn't easy. I've done it. It takes courage to go off salary and wait for a suitable part. But if you're serious about the future of your career and also want a long-range one, it's... Well, as Charles Lawton once advised me, you must never lose the courage to hang yourself.
Depends upon how you mean that.
I mean, stand up for what you think.
Oh, but I'm saying that with our present star system, an actor doesn't have a chance to guide his own career.
I say he does, by refusing parts he feels are not for him. I once believed enough in this to ask a court to decide whether I was right or wrong. I have to admit the court decided I was wrong, but at least I was fighting for what I believed in. Olivia de Havilland believed enough also to take the same case into a court. In her case, the court decided she was right.
Yes, and the new law was passed. And you both helped every actor in Hollywood.
But it was chiefly for our own good, for a chance to do what we wanted. For instance, I doubt very much if Olivia had been under contract to a studio, if they'd have thought of her for the girl in the snake pit, chose that property herself. And the success of the careers of Jimmy Cagney and Humphrey Bogart had in no small measure been the result of fighting for the part they believed in themselves for themselves.
But that's exactly my complaint about the studio.
Heather, again, I say it is up to the wisdom and courage of the actor himself. Maybe it's just stubbornness on all our parts. You know what Joe Mankiewicz said should be put on my tombstone?
What?
Here lies Betty Davis. She did it the hard way.
Well, I'll certainly admit that in your case, a little stubborn individualism has paid off. I'll never criticize you for playing Margot in All About Eve for 20th Century Fox.
That picture's a little on the same subject, you know, Heather. To be sure, it's a story of theater people, not motion picture people.
Yes, it's all about Eve, but you're not Eve in the picture.
No, no, and that's the play's Eve. She's young, she can only think of one thing, climbing to the top, and I guess you might say I'm the ladder she picked.
Sounds mighty uncomfortable.
It is. For everybody around her. That's the story.
You play Margot Channing, the great Broadway actress.
Mm-hmm, and not so young. There's one scene, Heather, that explains what it's all about. This this whole business of being an actress and worrying about yourself and about people climbing to get your place and the reaching you do yourself to get what you want.
You mean things you want, like that director you were in love with? His name was Bill.
Oh, that and much more. Happiness is what any woman wants most of all, I suppose. Sometimes it doesn't exactly harmonize with a career like Margot's. I remember I was sitting in an automobile. We were supposed to be on our way to New York. I had a performance that night, but instead we were stalled in the snow. We were out of gas. Karen, a friend of mine, was with me. Her playwright husband, Lloyd, was going to get help.
Be careful, Lloyd. Don't break your neck on that ice.
What a way to die, trying to get an actress to the theater in time. You suppose you'll be buried with royalty. Roll up the window, Karen.
Don't joke about such things.
How fortunate that I have an understudy in New York, so ready, so willing, and so able to go on. Dear little Eve.
Lloyd always looks so pathetic whenever he does anything physical.
Well, it seems to me that walking, for most people, is not very dangerous. Be brave, he'll come back. With or without gas. Mind the radio on. You want it on?
Doesn't matter.
I detest you. Karen. I haven't been very pleasant this weekend.
Well, we've all seemed a little tense lately.
Come to think of it, I haven't been very pleasant for weeks. For that, I'm truly sorry. More than any two people I know, I don't want you and Lloyd to be angry with me.
We're never deeply angry. You just get sore, the way you do.
We know you too well. So many people know me. I wish I did. I wish someone would tell me about me.
You're Margot.
Just Margot. And what is that, besides something spelled out in light bulbs, I mean, besides something called a temperament, which consists mostly of swooping about in a broomstick and screaming at the top of my voice. Infants behave the way I do, you know. They carry on and misbehave. They'd get drunk if they knew how. When they can't have what they want. When they feel unwanted or insecure or unloved.
What about Bill?
What about Bill?
He's in love with you.
More than anything in this world, I love Bill. And I want Bill. And I want him to want me. But me. Not Margot Channing, the actress. And if I can't tell them apart, how can he?
And why should he?
And why should you? Bill's in love with Margot Channing. He fought with her, worked with her, loved her. For 10 years from now, Margot Channing, the actress, will have ceased to exist. And what's left will be... what?
Margot. Bill is only 8 years younger than me.
Those years stretch as the years go on. I've seen it happen too often.
Not to you. Not to Bill.
Isn't that what they always say?
I thought you wanted the radio off.
I don't know what I want. I don't suppose the heater runs and the motor doesn't.
Silly, isn't it? You think they fixed it so people could just sit in the car and keep warm?
Karen, about Eve, I've acted pretty disgracefully for her.
Well...
No. Let's not fumble for excuses. Not here and now with my hair down. At best, let's say I've been oversensitive to... well, to the fact that she's so young, so feminine and potent. So many things I want to do for Bill. Funny business, a woman's career. The things you drop on your way up the ladder so you can move faster. You forget you'll need them again when you go back to being a woman. But one career all females have in common, whether we like it or not, being a woman. Sooner or later, we've got to work on it. No matter what other careers we've had or wanted. And in the last analysis, nothing is any good unless you can look up just before dinner or turn around in bed and then... without that, you're not a woman. You're something with a French provincial office or a book full of clippings. But you're not a woman. Slow curse in the end.
there are many stars in the Hollywood sky. Maybe Betty Davis and I didn't agree on whose job it is to keep them shining brightly. But one thing I know for certain, her star never had greater brilliance than it does right now. After All About Eve. Yes, success is one of the most popular words in the English language. It heralds the attainment of a goal. Back of that, however, always lies the story of courage, of persistence, of steadfastness. Success doesn't come accidentally, as sometimes does fame. It doesn't come automatically, as sometimes does fortune. It starts with dreams. Dreams that for the will to carry on and the courage to follow through. How many of us have dreams and the fortitude to carry them through? How many of us strip our mental gears instead of greasing them in this rugged journey towards favorable termination of something attempted? How many of us appreciate the satisfaction of sheer achievement, though the material rewards be mighty meager? Not many, I fear. It's all the fame and fortune are the members of the trilogy which draw the packed houses. It's only on your own marquee that success registers its true value. You know, you realize, within you there is that satisfaction which comes only from your own accomplishment, the one possession that cannot be taken away from you. And finally, you understand what Thoreau meant when he said, if one advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in the common hours. For success, you see, is entirely in your own hands, and frequently, you alone will know when it comes.
Next week, NBC will again bring you Hedda Hopper with news of the stars and the stars that make news. There'll be songs by Dinah Shore, an argument with Victor Mature, who'll be joined by Richard Widmark for a dramatic highlight, and as Miss Hopper's special guest of honor, the one and only Mary Garden.
Good night, everybody.